The content presented in this radio show, hosted by the Attorneys of Legacy Legal Planning, LLC, is intended for educational purposes only. It does not constitute legal advice, and listeners are strongly advised not to rely on the information provided for specific legal decisions. Legacy Legal Planning, LLC, and its attorneys are not responsible for any actions taken based on the content of this show. For personalized legal advice, listeners are encouraged to consult with a duly licensed attorney in their respective state.
WMEX Quincy, Boston. Streaming at WMEXBoston.com. And on your smart speaker, just say play WMEX.
The greatest hits of all time are back. This is the all-new WMEX.
WMEX Boston.
Legacy Legal Live, hosted by Kendra O'Toole, Michelle Reed, and Elizabeth Caruso of Legacy Legal Planning, is a show about discussing your estate plans, options, and answering your questions. Call in at 781-834-9639 and start your lifelong partnership covered by benefits that you've earned through proper legacy planning. Now here's your hosts, Kendra, Michelle, and Elizabeth.
Good evening and welcome to Legacy Legal Live. I'm Kendra O'Toole.
I'm Michelle Reed.
And I am Elizabeth Caruso.
And we are the attorneys from Legacy Legal Planning in Norwell. And we service clients in estate planning. And we can be found on Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn at Legacy Legal Planning. We invite you to call in tonight as we talk about different non-traditional families and how planning comes into play in those situations. The phone number is 781-834-9639. So we do welcome your questions and ask you to give a call in so that we can help maybe answer some of those burning questions you have. We have been doing a journal prompt, a legacy journal prompt on our Instagram and Facebook and LinkedIn every week. We'd love for you to follow along. In the last 2 weeks, you can go back to our recordings and hear the questions. This is for you to put together your legacy story. And I'm going to have Liz step in and talk about the legacy journal prompt.
All right. So this week's legacy journal prompt is asking you to write about how you learned to drive.
So get out your journal and put that in. If you need to look back at the old ones or learn more about the future ones, be sure to follow us on any of those platforms.
And this journal is meant to, you know, have all the warm feelings, the traditions, but also the funny stuff. So feel free to, if you have a funny learning to drive story like I do, make sure that you leave that memory for your family. I was sort of one of the younger ones, so I was one of the last of my friends to get my license, so I had the benefit of just hopping in cars at that point. But when I was finally able to get my permit and learn to drive, my mother was the one who was designated to teach me initially, and about my second or third outing with her, I took a very sharp turn at about 45 miles an hour, and she had since refused to help teach me to drive after that. So then it became my father's job. So I was on the road, and thankfully no police were behind me, and I have yet to receive a quote-unquote speeding ticket, knock on wood, but she is scarred for life, and that is my story.
So, as I mentioned this evening, we are going to focus on non-traditional families, including unmarried domestic partners, second marriages, spouses living separately, single and child-free, married and child-free individuals. And so first, we're going to do a little kind of basic review of some of the basics of estate planning that we've talked about over the weeks, but we're just going to touch on that a little bit before we jump into these different situations.
So getting back to very, very basics, for your general estate plan, most people have a healthcare proxy, which nominates someone to make healthcare decisions for you. Most people have a power of attorney, which nominates somebody to make financial decisions for you. And really, any type of decision that is not covered by the healthcare proxy. So real estate, business, you know, bank accounts, car insurance, you name it, a power of attorney can do it. Then there are wills, and the will tells the probate court how you want your assets to be divided when you pass away. But these are only assets that are in your name alone when you pass away. This does not cover anything that has a beneficiary designation or anything that is jointly owned with somebody else or anything that is in a trust. And a trust is a mechanism or a creation that can hold property. A trust has a trustee, which is the person who controls the trust. A trust has a beneficiary, which is the person who benefits from the trust. And the trustee has to manage the trust on behalf of the beneficiary and for the best interest of the beneficiary. For many people, we are creating very simple trusts that just avoid probate for assets that cannot have beneficiary designations, like real estate. The way that real estate is passed in Massachusetts, it's very beneficial to put it into a trust so that you do not have the real estate going through the probate court and having to wait for the probate court to give permission to the person who is petitioning to have your will approved to be able to sell your real estate. So that is basic estate planning 101 in about a minute and a half.
So we're going to jump a little bit into considerations that need to come into play for unmarried domestic partners. It's very common that we have clients that may have been in a prior relationship or may not believe in marriage or for financial reasons might not be getting married, but they want to be sure that a proper plan is put in place, especially when there isn't something legally that ties them, such as marriage, as there are some laws that will cover some things for married people. But if you are not married, you lose a lot of those benefits.
And this is really important here in Massachusetts because we do not have common law marriage. Many other states have the concept of common law marriage in that if you are living together, cohabitating, and, you know, basically putting yourself out there to other people to show that you are in a relationship that, you know, mirrors a marriage, that after a certain number of years, you will in fact be considered married under the eyes of that state's law for inheritance purposes and, you know, splitting up of assets purposes and all sorts of things like that. You will be considered married. Massachusetts does not have that. In Massachusetts, you are either married because you got married or you are not married. And those are the only two options.
And the worrisome thing there is you, as Kendra mentioned, you're holding yourself out and you, and everything you do, you live together, essentially, your finances are commingled in one way, shape, or form, but you essentially everything but the piece of paper, essentially. So in this case, it's important to make sure that if your partner is someone that you would want to make a decision for you, if your partner is someone that you would want to be your beneficiary, you have to be on top of making sure that those wishes are legally documented with the proper legal paperwork. So everything from the documents that Liz was mentioning earlier, if you want your partner to make a healthcare decision for you, you need to have a validly executed healthcare proxy. If you want your partner to inherit your assets, because that would be the logical thing, you want to make sure that you have a proper will or a trust in place.
And this is, I mean, even married couples don't have the spouses don't have the right to make healthcare decisions without these documents in place. And so then having a, you know, partnership that's been together for all these years, but then really when it comes to family or who might be called in a situation, they're not even, you know, going to be on the radar, unfortunately, with a hospital or possibly a doctor. And so it's important to put your wishes down in place to ensure that that loved one that's there for you is there and able to make those decisions.
And I've met with quite a few couples over the years who have chosen not to get married for one reason or another. And, you know, I know we've talked about it on the show before, the Massachusetts estate tax threshold is low compared to a lot of other states. And it's now $2 million is the threshold where if you are over $2 million when you pass away, inclusive of your entire estate, you will pay estate tax on the amount over $2 million. So I've sat down with many couples who, you know, have been working their whole lives and, you know, they've saved up lots of money and they've, you know, garnered quite a bit of wealth. So they're over that estate tax threshold. And I'm literally talking to them about, you know, maybe you should get married so that you can avoid estate taxes. And we go through each and every calculation as to, you know, what would happen with your assets if you stayed single, what would happen if with your assets if you got married, what would happen with your assets if we did some, you know, fancy estate planning with some irrevocable trusts and things like that. And I've had clients where I've done, you know, 10 different calculations of, you know, different tax scenarios for them, being, you know, trying to show them what their options were and say, you know, this makes sense for this reason. This makes sense for this reason. Interestingly enough, I've never had anybody decide to get married because of it.
And with these considerations, you know, if you sometimes you might own the home together, but then you still have your own separate bank accounts. And if you do not direct where you want that to go, the state law is going to decide, and it's going to be your bloodline family, not that partner. And that could put them in a financial situation that what if they can't afford the home without, you know, some of your assets? And not that it's much because you lose an income, but with a married couple, Social Security, depending on who passed away, if their Social Security was higher, the surviving spouse can get a bump up. And so these are considerations to ensure that your partner is able to still live the lifestyle that they were living and, you know, hopefully stay in their home and not have to be put in a position of possibly selling the home and not being able to live there.
And to add on to that, in your example, you might own the home jointly, but in a lot of cases, when we have some unmarried couples, oftentimes the home is in one partner's name. Maybe, you know, they decided to move into to one of the properties. So we've got an unmarried couple living in a home that's only in the name of one of the partners. And in that case, you might have been living there for years on end, contributing to the home, to the mortgage, you name it. And the lawful heir in that case is not you, it is the homeowner's family. So it's in that case, it's even more important to make sure that it's clear how the property is supposed to pass.
The next one that we are going to touch on a bit is second marriages and blended families. It is common that we're working with clients that are in a second marriage, sometimes with minor children. Still, a lot of times it's with adult children, with the clientele that we're working with. And it's complexities of figuring it out. How do we want things, A, split for all the families? Some people are clear. I came in with what was mine. You know, you came in with what was yours. And it's all going to each other's family and sticking within the family lines. But it's not always that simple. And sometimes people say, oh, we just pool everything and split it between all the children. But there's lots of considerations of things that could change when one spouse passes away and not the other. What the law covers in regard to a second marriage for a spouse, if they had children from a prior relationship, that surviving spouse does not get everything. So if you're wanting to ensure that you're taking care of your spouse, you need to be sure that you put that down in writing.
And from a, you know, probate administration perspective, this is, I think, where I see the most issues and the most litigation, because you have people who were married who have likely have children who have no bond or sentimentality towards each other or toward the other parent. You know, there's one thing where, you know, there's a second marriage when kids are young and they have, you know, they've grown up with this person. But a lot of second marriages or third marriages or whatever number you're on today happen when, you know, the children and grandchildren are adults and there's certain expectations for, you know, assets that have been in families for generations. And there's certain expectations that, you know, certain things will pass on to certain family members. And those expectations can get blurred and missed and things like that when you throw a new person into the mix. It's usually better to just be crystal clear with everyone as far as how assets are going to be divided in situations like this. Because it's clearly up to the couple as to what happens to their assets. But when you leave it to chance and leave it to the probate court, that's when other people can come in with their opinions or their, you know, dad promised me this, mom promised me why. And it can cause a lot of issues and it can cost a whole lot of money to litigate all these things. Like I said, this is definitely where I see the worst of the probate court.
And even during your lifetime, you know, as I mentioned, your spouse does not have a statutory right to make healthcare decisions for you or financial decisions for you if you're ever in the position that you can't make your own. And if there's an adult child that thinks that they should be in that position, you're going to be in that battle in court during lifetime and trying to battle out of whether it should be the spouse or that adult child and which one, you know, the judge has to decide which one's the best person or what that parent might have wanted, that spouse. And so you're really just ending up pitting these families against each other even a little bit more than there might have been to begin with.
And even to roll back just a little bit, when you have second or third marriages or whatever, assets that don't end up in probate, a lot of assets today have beneficiary designations. And when people get divorced, they have a divorce agreement that says how they're going to change said beneficiary designations. Those don't always get changed. Sometimes things linger and, you know, you forget about assets or, you know, you thought you sent in a form and you didn't send in the form. And 20 years later, somebody dies. There's a life insurance policy and it's being paid to the ex-spouse as opposed to the new spouse. Those things can work out okay. Those things can also work out very, very poorly. So those are definitely things to keep in mind when you have families that have this type of structure that you need to be very cognizant of just being crystal clear on everything.
We also sometimes have feelings or issues and with people that are trying to figure out how to properly disperse to children when there might be a biological child from that second marriage, but then other children from previous relationship. That is something that we really work through with our clients a lot as to, because there are different feelings and emotions that come into play in between spouses and when they're talking about it and kind of how they see their plan to be played out. And so we really get into that emotional side of the planning in trying to help our clients find what they feel is the best route to go in that situation, because sometimes that biological child is the one that might be there more as the caretaker or just be more involved in the life at the time. And so there's a little more want to maybe provide for that child a little bit more than some children from a previous relationship that same relationship might just not be there.
And to that point, it's a nod to what we sort of consistently say in all of our messaging is that, you know, if you have the ability to have these discussions, they can be difficult to bring up and they can bring up a lot of that emotion. But the more open you are with with the dialogue in one way, shape, or form, it can make a difference when we get to the situations that Liz is talking about. Maybe it can prevent those decisions if, you know, you kind of have that conversation while we're all still here and healthy, as opposed to not being able to explain your reasoning when you're gone. So constantly just thinking of ways to bring up the topics. They can be difficult, but, you know, keep treading it and approaching it. And it same for, you know, if you are the adult child in a blended family, speaking to siblings, it's not always ideal and we don't always get along. So it might not be possible, but in any way, shape or form, don't put off the conversations if and when possible.
So another situation that we have come across with some clients is spouses living separately. They may have been separated.
This is happening more and more.
It is. We have some that are in totally different states. We have some that might just be on a short break. Or we have some that have been separated for 20 years but not divorced. And this really does change under the law in the sense that if you don't plan for what your wishes are, then your spouse that maybe you haven't been with for 20 plus years, they're still going to have a right, an elective share under the law. But at the same time, they could get it all if you don't properly make a plan. And that may not be your wish.
Yeah. So we see this in a couple of different ways. One where we're still a very happily married couple. They just, you know, they might have family that live on different coasts and they've decided that, you know, they're retired now and this is how they want to live bi-coastal, and they've got properties in two different places, and that's just the distance makes the heart grow fonder, is that what they say? So it works for them. But from a planning perspective, if you have properties in two different states, you're then dealing with two different states' laws and their probate laws and their trust laws and their intestacy laws, all of those things. So you want to make sure that you're actually consulting attorneys in both states if that's the case, and either, you know, trying to make a plan that works in conjunction with one another, because that can get pretty messy. And then we have the clients that, you know, aren't getting along so well.
Those are the clients that often say it's cheaper to keep her.
Liz's favorite
state. But have decided to live apart. So they never actually divided any of their assets, yet they're living completely different lives and don't even interact whatsoever. This can bring up a whole bunch of issues. It can obviously affect probate, because if you don't make proper estate planning, that, you know, not living with you spouse is going to inherit potentially all of your assets. Other issues it can have are with Medicaid. If one person needs to go into a nursing home and is applying for long-term care, and they are still married, that other spouse's assets are actually still all up for grabs, technically under the Medicaid laws, for the eligibility purposes. And, you know, what does that application process look like? Because there's probably a whole lot of cooperation about assets going back and forth and disclosures and things like that. Wink, wink, nod, nod. You know, what happens when, you know, the spouse who needs care can't get care because they can't get approved for Medicaid because they can't get access to, you know, their not spouse's spouse assets to be able to answer some questions. It can be a mess, an absolute mess.
It's definitely one that, you know, we've been able to work with the clients to ensure that we are getting their wishes followed. There are times in this situation as well, and I guess not even necessarily this situation, we might have some spouses that are living together, but you don't have to do your estate plan with your spouse. If your spouse is not ready to do their own estate plan, if they, you know, don't want to talk about it, or they don't, it's a hard thing to talk about. So a lot of people just don't want to take that action. They think, oh, if I do an estate plan, I'm just asking for, you know, death to come get me. And so if they're not ready, but you're ready, you can take action and do your plan. So there are times that even if it's a married couple and they're still living together or separately, we are doing separate plans sometimes for just one spouse to ensure that they have somebody to step in for those healthcare decisions or those financial decisions, and to ensure that their assets are passed accordingly to their wishes. And so I think that's a big thing for people to really realize, because we do have some people that will call and say, oh, my spouse, you know, they don't want to come in and do this. So I'm just stuck. I've been waiting for years and been waiting for them to get on board. They don't have to be on board for you to do your plan. And so if you're ready and you know that this is something you should do, then take that step for yourself to get your stuff in order, even though your spouse might not be quite there.
Yeah, that can be interesting as to reasons why people decide to do separate estate planning. I mean, obviously there's the, you know, we haven't lived together in 20 years. We want to make sure that, you know, I'm taken care of and I don't care about that other person. But there are plenty of couples who are still together who can't agree on planning. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe they decide to make separate estate plans because they want to make sure that, you know, different people benefit than from the other person's assets. You know, they might have different charitable things that they find to be really important, or different family members that they want to make sure that actually benefit from their estate planning.
It's something that when the families can come together and the spouses can come together and do their plan, that's great. But don't let that hold you back from doing your plan if that spouse isn't ready. Because unfortunately, we don't know when these things can be needed. And that is the time, if you don't take the action and you're ready for it, you're just leaving that door open for your family to have to go to court if something were to happen to you. So I think this is a good time for us to take our break. You're listening to Legacy Legal Live on WMEX Boston. We are Kendra O'Toole, Michelle Reed, and Elizabeth Crusoe with Legacy Legal Planning.
You want to feel important. You want to be a part of something bigger, something that matters and can help change things. You want to feel like you belong. We know. We felt that way too. And that's why we did something about it. We aren't just Army National Guard soldiers. We are normal people just like you. And together, we can make a difference. Take on your legacy. Visit NationalGuard.com to find out more.
Sponsored by the Massachusetts Army National Guard. Aired by the Massachusetts Broadcasters Association at this station.
We are a staple in the neighborhood. Most of our customers have been coming here since they were children for 75 years. It's been the Fowler House since 1946. And so there's a lot of memories here. And so when people think of Quincy Center, they do think of the Fowler House. We're in our 43rd year here at the Fowler House, and we haven't changed much. We are going to add a few new menu items. We're going to spruce up some of the ones that we already have on the menu. We're going to improve on a few appetizers. Adding pulled pork to the menu permanently on the sandwich side, adding Italian sandwich, so it's going to broaden the sandwich offerings. We're also going to add a special burger in the name of someone at WMEX. We're going to roll out a new drink list, adding some fall flavors for the next few months, winter flavors, and then some permanent items such as some new margaritas, bourbon smashes, old fashions, kind of get back to that traditional cocktail menu. Fowler House Cafe, located at 1049 Hancock Street, and online at thefowlerhousecafe.com. We are on Facebook, Instagram, and you can, of course, hear us on the airwaves at 1510 WMEX.
Hey, folks, join me every Wednesday night, bell time, 7 p.m. Joe Matarazzo here, your authority having jurisdiction of the Squared Circle, right here, WMEXBoston.com, 1510 a.m. and 101.1 FM. Card subject to change.
And welcome back to Legacy Legal Live. I'm Kendra O'Toole. I have with me Elizabeth Crusoe and Michelle Reed. We are from Legacy Legal Planning. So this evening, we have been speaking about blended families, non-traditional families, unmarried partners. And so first, we're going to start again with our journal prompt. We talked to the last couple weeks how we've been doing this legacy journal for said that it'd be great for you if you wanted to leave your legacy for your loved ones to get a journal and start writing some stories for them. And we're giving a weekly prompt on our Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn, which can be found at Legacy Legal Planning. And today our prompt for you is to write about how you learned to drive. And I believe Liz has a little story that she's going to share.
I grew up living very close to my grandparents, as I think a lot of people do in this area. They're only five houses down from me. So I had, you know, parents very close to me and my grandparents. So I had lots of people teaching me to drive. But I have a very particular memory of my grandfather. First of all, he was letting me drive his like brand new Tahoe, which was awesome. and he was teaching me how to drive on the highway. And we were going to Manomet in Plymouth, Whitehorse Beach in particular. So if any of you know where that is, you know that it's the one left-hand exit off of Route 3. And we were coming from probably the Braintree area. And he had me get on the highway and drive. And he was reminding me that I'd have to eventually get over to the left lane because it's the one left exit, blah, blah, blah. So I was like, okay, I'm going to get this. I have control of this. And I'm going to get a left lane early. And I was too nervous to drive really fast because I'm on the highway for probably one of the first times. And I'm driving a truck that's probably less than a year old. And I've got my grandfather next to me explaining how to drive, and I don't realize that I'm only going like 45 miles an hour in the left lane on Route 3, and it's probably the summertime if we're going to Whitehorse. So there's lots of angry people behind me. And he just keeps reminding me when I probably got in the left lane somewhere around the Kingston exit to get off on for Whitehorse. So that's a good 5 or 6 miles to go that like, nope, you're in the left lane. You are holding up the entire highway. You are going 45 miles an hour in the left lane. The left lane is for people who want to speed, Liz, not for people who are going to go really, really slow. So he was not very fast to let me either drive his car or take me on the highway again anytime soon. However, I do drive in the left lane now, and I do recognize that it is for people who like to drive fast.
We hope that some of this brings back the memories of you learning to drive and that you can write down these stories for your loved ones to remember and learn more about you as well. So going on with today's topic about non-traditional families, we're going to talk a bit about single and child-free individuals. So I'm single. I'm an auntie. I have a niece and nephew that are 5 and 7, and I do commonly work with clients that are in the same situation. They, you know, chose to be child free, and they may be child free at the time, and they're doing planning to ensure that they are leaving their assets to whether it's siblings or their nieces and nephews, or it might be other. It's not just family. Sometimes we have people leave to friends, but it's important. It's important for everyone to do this estate planning, but I feel that sometimes the single people, it's even a little more important in the sense that most, I'd say probably all accounts are individually owned. Whereas at least if you're in a partnership or married, there's quite commonly some accounts that are jointly owned. And also homeownership. A lot of times if you're in a partnership or a marriage, you do own the home jointly. But when you're a single individual, it is in your name alone. And so you are even more susceptible to having your assets end up in the probate court.
Yeah. And this can be problematic for people who have not done planning, because when you don't have a will, the state of Massachusetts has one for you. And it goes by your heirs at law. And your heirs at law are first your spouse and then your children. So if you're single and child free, which some days I'm going to call the happy people, depending upon the day. Side note, I had a great aunt who died at 104. And we always used to joke that the only reason why she lived to 104 was because she had no kids. So if you don't have a spouse, you don't have children, it next goes up to your parents. And it's a legitimate question as to whether or not you want your parents to inherit from you if you pass away. If you are younger and your parents are maybe, you know, still working or retirement age, that's probably not a bad thing. If you are older and you have some wealth that you've acquired yourself from working and having a career and your parents are retirement age or older, you want to think long and hard about having your parents actually inherit from you, because it could jeopardize benefits that they could receive further down the line. So if your parents need long-term care or mass health in the home or something like that, and you don't have an estate plan and you pass away, if they inherited from you, that could trigger a loss of benefits for them, or at least cause a whole lot of issues where they'd have to scramble and figure some stuff out.
And not even if they need it in the future. If you're in a situation now that you don't have a plan and no kids and no spouse, and you have a parent that is in a nursing home and is receiving benefits, they, you know, those benefits will be gone. So it's not even just the future risk of that. If your parent is already in that situation, it is crucial that you do a plan, because you don't know, God forbid, when something could happen to you. So we want to ensure that you're not then getting them kicked off. And even if you don't have a lot, people, you know, I hear people all say all the time, oh, I don't think I have a lot of assets for anyone, but
the threshold is $2,000. Right.
So you are getting them kicked off their benefits, you know, really, probably no matter what they inherit.
And a common roadblock when we're working with clients who are single and child-free, the thing that they say to us a lot is, and a lot of the reasons why they don't do planning is because they have a hard time often deciding, well, who am I going to name in these roles? If I'm doing a trust, who's going to be my trustee? If I'm doing a trust, who's going to be my beneficiary? All of those things. And so to Liz's point, if you don't think about these things long and hard and name an individual, then the state is going to come in and play a role there. And oftentimes, you have extended family members and things of that nature. It's what we hear a lot is, I don't want to burden them. It's not like they're my spouse or my child, where they have this sense of obligation. I don't want to burden my extended family. But then what we say is, listen, they're likely in a position where they would step up for you anyway, right? These people love you. They would likely step into these roles anyway. So make the role as easy as possible for them by giving them the legal powers that they need to step in and help when needed.
And I have a lot that appoint their friends. You know, it doesn't have to be family or extended family. They have their best friends be those healthcare decision makers or the trustee and ensure that things are passing the way they want to. But they're pulling in, you know, family that they made to make those decisions. And so really think out of the box when you're doing your estate planning. I think people do just think it's family. And that's really not what's at the heart of estate planning. What's there is making the plan that are for the people that are your family, whatever you define that to be. And so it's not just biological family.
I think I actually have quite a few people who come to the office for meetings who are in this type of a situation who are like, well, I was talking and my friend said just use an attorney to be my power of attorney or my personal representative or my trustee or whatever it is. We don't want to do that as attorneys. We like really want to be the last resort. I am on the list to be appointed by the court for people who are either fighting or, you know, can't decide who's going to serve in certain capacities for a fiduciary. But I don't like to be chosen by clients because oftentimes it's usually because they haven't thought outside the box as to who they're going to have serve. You know, they haven't thought, oh, I can have a friend, I can have this person, or, you know, my best friend lives in Florida and I'm in Massachusetts. How can they possibly be my healthcare proxy? Well, we have this thing called Zoom now and the telephone. So it's usually not that hard to get information from one place to another. So there's, you know, the ability to do that. And then, you know, FedEx can be a wonderful thing as far and as can email to get documents back and forth.
And we still even use fax. I had somebody just comment the other day on you know, Facebook being like, does anyone really use fax? And that should just be obsolete. And I was like, we still need to use that for certain things. And so there are plenty of options to get that information around.
These certain things that use fax are the government still.
That's exactly what I said was when we deal with state agencies.
Everyone else has moved on. But you know, you can really pick anyone. And what, like, I'd seriously have these conversations with clients saying, pick anyone but your attorney, because it's just going to cost extra money. It's fine to have an attorney help with the person you choose to go through these decisions. But when you choose an attorney to be in these positions, first of all, your attorney has to make decisions that you would be having a loved one make. So you kind of have to have that heart-to-heart conversation with your attorney and be like, you know, these are what my wishes are. Whereas your friends might already know what your wishes are. And, you know, you may be saying, well, I don't want to burden my friends or whatever with having to divide up my assets or things like that. Well, you can name them and they can choose to hire an attorney to help them with the bigger issues, help them with the probate court or with the trust administration or with, you know, certain filings or things like that. But they can do the little stuff. They can, you know, go to the bank and cash out accounts. They can call, you know, certain financial institutions and get paperwork and things like that and save a boatload of money, because those little things really add up when you have a professional doing them.
That's an excellent point. I think a light bulb goes off when we say, listen, you've got them being sort of your point person, but guess what? They can hire the professionals, and it's not even burdened from their own finances. Your assets can be utilized in that regard. So I've had clients sit back and go, I never thought of that. So there are options. You just have to think and chat with your attorney about what, you know, like you said, thinking outside the box.
And after those conversations, if they still say, no, we want a lawyer, then we'll do it. But I want to make sure that we have those conversations, usually at least twice, so I can hammer home, no, but you understand what this means, right? Like, you understand that I'm going to be charging my hourly rate to go do these things that somebody else can do and not charge you money.
And that actually brings up a good point, because when they're saying, I don't want to burden them and things of that nature, we can draft into some of these documents compensation and reimbursement for any of the things. Now, oftentimes, if we have a loved one, they're not taking advantage of those. But I think it makes you as a client feel better knowing that the option is there. Should they, you know, need to take a half a day off of work to accomplish something that's potentially complicated, you can sit and feel comfortable knowing that if they need compensation, the legal document allows for that. And so the next sort of topic that we'll go into is, so we're going from single and child free to single parent families. So if you have minor children, and whether, you know, you divorced, lost a loved one, but you're in a situation where, you know, you are the sole caretaker for the children. This can have other complications and worries. Most parents, you know, the guardianship is, of course, the first and foremost. Most of in a two unit family, we can kind of sit back and think, oh, you know, we have a partner, we have a spouse, we can rely on that person if the guardianship is an issue. So in this case, we talk to clients, the first thing that they come to us for is, okay, what's the guardianship situation look like? And the previous discussion that we had, we're sort of thinking about potentially extended family, friends, and things of that nature. So it's important to make sure that your guardianship designations are in place there as well.
Yes. And in addition to the guardianship designations, if the children are still minors, you want to make sure that you have a trust in place to actually be able to distribute out their assets if they, you know, have an inheritance, in worst case scenario, over a period of time that is not just when they turn 18. Because as I'm sure most of you can imagine, handing a check to an 18-year-old that has lots of zeros is probably not the best idea.
I just had a conversation today with a potential client about, they have two minor children, and they were asking kind of, you know, to do the trust versus just the will plan, what benefit, what's really the pros. So I kind of did all the math and I said, well, with just the will plan, if you pass away with minors, if you both pass away, you have the potential of having 6 court cases going on all at once between guardianships, conservatorships, and the probates of everybody. Whereas with a trust, you just have to deal with the guardianship, which there would only be 2 court cases. And so that's a big difference of time, money, and expenses going from 6 court cases to 2.
People like that are going to put my kid through college.
They did decide right away. As soon as we discussed that, they said, we're doing the trust plan. So, you know, it is a big difference. Massachusetts requires all different separate court cases for these. All your minor children don't go into one case. They each get their own individual case. They all need separate petitions, separate filings. And so this really, and finances versus their health care, you know, their individual daily living, all of this really adds up with time, legal fees, and court expenses.
And this is something to keep in mind, probably for grandparents too, who are doing their estate planning, who have, you know, children who might be single with children, or who want to give directly to grandchildren, to just keep in mind that you can't give to a minor easily in this state. It requires court intervention, so you should probably do it through some other mechanism.
And then we run into those who just have, going back to the beneficiary designation conversation earlier too, a lot of people try to circumvent, well, I'll just name them as my secondary beneficiary, but you're in the same boat in that regard. So even if they're the beneficiary of a life insurance policy, which we see a lot with grandparents too, they'll kind of make their minor grandchildren, and then you're in the same boat that Kendra was referring to earlier. Even though they are a listed designated beneficiary, if they are a minor, they don't have immediate access to those funds. So a guardian or a loved one would have to, again, open up those 6 different probate issues in to access the funds and things of that nature. So things to keep in mind in terms of that as well.
I wish it was just not allowed to name.
You cannot do this.
Right. Like, I wish it was a state law of, like, you cannot name somebody under 18 on a life insurance policy, on, you know, because I think that would open the eyes of some people, because they feel that they can do it because the form allows them to do it and the company takes it and the company lets them put this 5-year-old down as a beneficiary.
Is, there's no education.
So they don't know to plan properly. Exactly.
Is. Well, do you guys remember the case I had where the 5-year-old was put on the deed and what mess that made?
Right.
Like that, I mean, that can cause a disaster when you do not have proper guidance and you're making decisions and you want grandchildren involved. You have to actually do it correctly, or it can cause an absolute mess. I had a client who came to me from a real estate attorney who they were trying to sell their house to say it on the side is not fair, but there, it was an impending foreclosure and they had a buyer who was going to be able to get them out of that situation, and they needed the house closed pretty quickly. But 5 years previous to that, for whatever reason they had, they put their 5-year-old grandchild on their deed. So this 5-year-old owned 10% of a $1.5 million house, which, great for the 5-year-old, except for the fact that now when the house is going to be sold, the 5-year-old does not have the legal capacity to sell their share. The 5-year-old doesn't have a legal guardian in the court's eyes because nobody has been appointed on their behalf, because a parent cannot just assume that role. So first we had to get the parent to be appointed to be the guardian and conservator of the child so that the house could actually be sold And then, because a conservator was involved, we needed to petition the court a second time for permission to sell the house for a certain value to make sure that the house was actually being sold at a fair market value and that the child was not being taken advantage of. This resulted in multiple thousands of dollars of legal fees on top of this impending foreclosure, where if the house had been put into a trust or something like that, for I can guarantee you at least half of what the legal fees were, none of this would have happened. So do not put minors on things. It causes really big issues.
So we have just about 10 minutes left. So let's hit on a couple of these final ones. Same-sex couples, families consisting of couples in same-sex relationships who may be legally married or just in a domestic partnership, may have children through adoption or surrogacy or maybe from previous relationships. A lot of the discussions that we had regarding married couples and their rights really apply. Everything in Massachusetts, you know, marriage-wise applies the same.
Yeah, marriage is marriage in couples.
Exactly.
Whether you're same-sex or not, doesn't exactly. matter.
Yep. So that all, you know, applies the same. But again, it goes back to the fact that Massachusetts laws do not have statutory rights for your spouse to be able to make decisions.
Yeah. And how one thing that is interesting that applies to same-sex couples that you should probably keep in mind in these situations is when there is a biological parent and a non-biological parent, that non-biological parent does still have to adopt the child legally to make sure that there is a legal relationship there just in case the worst happens.
Another common one that we come across is, you know, non-biological families. As I was talking about, a lot of us do make our own families, you know.
Thank you for being a friend.
That's right.
Those golden girls.
These close friendships or chosen relationships really a lot of times are stronger than blood or legal ties. And so you want to be sure that your loved ones that you're providing for may not and most likely will not be the people that are those non-biological family members, they're not going to fall under any state law. So ensuring that you're taking care of them means that you have to do a proper plan for that to happen.
Another one is guardianship arrangements. So unfortunately, these days we are seeing more and more where grandparents, aunts and uncles, etc., are taking guardianship for grandchildren, nieces and nephews, you know, because the parent has passed away, because the parent has substance abuse issues, because the parent has mental health issues, for whatever reason cannot, you know, raise the child. So there's somebody else stepping in. And when there's not that straight line, like blood relationship, proper planning has to be done to ensure what it is that you want to happen happens. So if it's like a grandparent and having guardianship over a grandchild, if the grandparent doesn't do proper planning, the money from the inheritance is going to go directly to the child as opposed to that grandchild. And you're now putting money into the hands of somebody who potentially has mental health problems or substance abuse problems or something like that, who has been determined by the court not to be competent enough to raise their own child. And now you're giving them an inheritance. So that can be problematic, clearly.
Another one is, and we're seeing a resurgence of this as well, is adult children living back at home. Whether it's a mutually beneficial situation where maybe they're back to help provide some care, but also receive lodging and some support as well. We have a lot of clients who that might not be your only child, and there is verbal wishes to make sure that if you pass away, that child is able to remain living in the home and some support from your estate is provided, because maybe they're struggling for one reason or another and your other children are, you know, quote unquote, doing okay, doing well, which is wonderful. But if, you know, there's a verbal wish there. You also have to make sure that's documented in the estate plan one way, shape, or form. And we can do that. We can be very creative, especially with trust planning when it comes to real estate and some of the assets. So just being mindful of if that's the situation, making sure that those wishes are put in your plan as well, because your other children might have other assumptions. They might think things are going equally. We've talked about this a lot, especially if that adult child living at home is providing care for you. You know, if you have increasing care needs and they're providing a good portion of the care, you may want to show appreciation for that by leaving them a little bit more.
And especially the law also assumes that if you don't do a plan, that is not what you intended and it is to be split equally. And even if your children then want to be sure that that one child gets the home, there's now other tax consequences, gifting, and other issues that come up for your other children. And so it really is crucial to be sure that you are planning for that appropriately to eliminate a lot of those issues.
And the flip side of this, of, you know, adult children moving into the parents' home is we're starting to see a lot of parents moving into their child's home. And with that, some parents are choosing to make changes to the child's home to make it more safe for them to be there as, you know, elderly people, or they're choosing to pay for additions on their children's house in order to make it so that they have their own space and can get the help that they need while still, you know, living in a safe manner. And these can all make complications. You know, if the parents are selling their home that they've had for, you know, 30, 40 years, and then taking that money and pouring it into one kid's house to then add on an addition to be able to live there. And there's other children who, you know, we're expecting to benefit from the parents' estate. You know, what does that look like? Because now all this money is tied up into one kid's house.
And depending on the assets, there may be ways to fix that, in the sense to get that equality, if that's, you know, what the parents were looking for. I have a client that did that. They built on, you know, and actually it wasn't even their child. It was a in-law, because they had lost their child and they wanted to be sure to help take care of their kids. And they then made sure that all the life insurance went to their son, because they did take out the money from their home for that in-law. So they wanted to ensure that they were taking care of their son as well, because they wanted to have that equality. So depending on the assets, you can make your plan work properly to take care of everybody, but it does depend on the situation. So we're getting towards the end of our show. We are going to just mention our legacy journal prompt one more time, in case you are joining us in this legacy journey. It is to write about how you learned to drive. And again, this is a weekly prompt that we'll be doing for you to leave some stories and legacies for your loved ones to read in the future. You have been listening to Legacy Legal Live on WMEX Boston. I'm Kendra O'Toole. With me is Michelle Reed and Elizabeth Caruso. We are from Legacy Legal Planning in Norwell. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn at Legacy Legal Planning. Please feel free to call our office at any time with any questions. Schedule a 15-minute call to maybe ask some questions and maybe discuss setting up a consultation. Our phone number is 781-971-5900. You can also find us online at legacylegalplanning.com, and you can contact us through email there as well. Thank you so much for listening this evening, and have a wonderful night.